I know Ray Kaplan was hoping that we'd get a decision yesterday, Ray. I'm sure you're just ready to find out what the ruling is one way or the other, aren't you, Ray Kaplan?
Oh, yes. I can't wait to finally just know one way or the other. I mean, this has been going on for so long. We just want an answer already.
Ray Kaplan.
And I know a lot of people out there feel that way.
Oh, everyone does, right? And I'm looking across the glass at someone who wants to know herself, Iridian, who was forgiven $20,000, right? You were okay with that because you were the Pell Grant as well. Now has no idea, so she's waited on bated breath like everybody else. By the way, Ray Kaplan, financialrelief.com. Ray, so let's back up a little bit for people that, I mean, you had to be living under a rock not to know exactly what happened, but walk us through the challenge to the forgiveness that President Biden had announced to college loan debtors. What was the challenge by, and how did this get to the Supreme Court?
Sure. So there were a few kind of Midwestern and Republican-led states that were challenging Biden's executive order that would give either $10,000 or $20,000 to borrowers, $10,000 or $20,000 in forgiveness of federal student loans to borrowers if they met if they were under a certain level of income during the pandemic, and it was tied to the HEROES Act from 2003, which allowed the Secretary of Education to forgive student loans under national emergency circumstances. So this executive order was challenged by these attorneys generals in some states as being essentially an unconstitutional executive order. And they also claimed that their quasi-state-run agency, which is called MOHELA, which is a student loan servicer, that MOHELA would lose a lot of money if these loans were forgiven. And then there were also a couple of borrowers who filed lawsuits also objecting to the executive order, basically stating that the administration didn't follow the appropriate rules and procedures and give them time to basically to comment on this passing of this executive order. So a couple challenges there to deal with. And the legal arguments I find really interesting because basically, the Biden administration is arguing that these plaintiffs don't have standing to sue. So mm-hmm. there's a narrow rule where you as a taxpayer have the ability to challenge something that the president or the administration is doing. It's called taxpayer standing. So what the Biden administration is saying is, look, these aren't the proper plaintiffs. They don't even have standing to sue. And so if they don't have standing to sue, then the executive order will survive.
Right.
So they have to overcome that hurdle. And I'm not sure that they can. And it sounded like Amy Coney Barrett also agrees that they might not have constitutional standing.
Yeah.
So that will be very interesting.
All right, we're getting into the weeds here, and I love it, and I'm going to just walk people through exactly what you're saying again, just kind of repeating it. So you have to show harm to essentially sue someone or sue the government, right? You've been harmed by them in some way. And the Supreme Court over the years, and including in rulings this year that have already released, have been very skeptical of potential harm or hypothetical harm, right? MOHELA saying this is going to cost us money, or the state saying that our MOHELA brand or whatever this is, they're going to lose some money because of this. The Supreme Court, in questioning, was skeptical of whether they did have that standing. And in a case they released yesterday, the United States versus Texas, which is a case involving federal immigration policy, nothing that has to do with student loan forgiveness, it was an 8-1 decision. The court concluded the states don't have standing. In fact, Justice Kavanaugh wrote, as this court's precedents amply demonstrate, Article 3 standing is not, quote, merely a troublesome hurdle to be overcome if possible so as to reach the merits of the lawsuit. It is part of the basic charter of the Constitution. Essentially what he's saying is even if you do have the merits, and let's say that people would argue the president doesn't have the authority to do this, Congress only has the authority to forgive student loans, even if those merits are okay, this standing issue is first, and you have to prove that first. That was Kavanaugh in a decision that was released yesterday. So, first of all, I want to ask you, Ray, because you're the expert on this. Am I wrong in anything of the interpretations I'm making here?
No, that's 100% correct, and you put it very accurately and succinctly in that standing is essential. In other words, you don't get any further with your lawsuit unless you can prove and demonstrate standing. And it's not an easy burden to achieve. It's a high burden. And so because I think the crux of it is that, or the reason for this is that we can't have everybody who is potentially harmed, even actually harmed, necessarily suing the president of the United States when a policy goes in a way that might potentially harm you.
Right.
There's more to standing than that. And really your remedy, if you disagree with what the administration is doing, is to get out there and rally the troops and rally voters and say, you know, this president has gone off the rails with these executive orders, and to vote them out of office. So constitutional standing is really a very key component to these types of challenges. So right. I'm very interested to see how they're going to rule on this. And a lot of people interpreted that ruling as good news for Biden's loan forgiveness, which I tend to agree with.
I'm probably the only person in the United States that doesn't have a law degree who reads the footnotes of Supreme Court decisions. And I noticed this one, Ray. I don't know if you probably had no time to actually read this decision. But this is back to the same decision that was yesterday. There was a footnote in Kavanaugh's ruling, and it said, to be sure, states sometimes have standing to sue the United States or an executive agency or officer. So he's saying, yes, states sometimes have standing. But he went on to say, in our dual system of federal and state sovereignty, meaning like we have the federal government has sovereignty over the country, but there's this, the states obviously have a lot of power too. And Kavanaugh says, in that system, federal policies frequently generate indirect effects on state revenues or state spending. And when a state asserts, for example, that a federal law has produced only those kind of indirect effects, the state's claim for standing can be more attenuated, I mean, harder to achieve. Meaning what he's saying is that federal law, yes, sometimes it can affect the state's bottom dollar. That's just an unfortunate side effect. But that doesn't necessarily mean you have standing. Is that what you're reading with that one, too?
Yes, absolutely.
And that's in a footnote. So that could pretend that, and that wasn't about the, and look, anything can happen. The Supreme Court justices often, I don't want to say contradict each other, but they look at the narrow aspects of one case. They decide on that. You think the principles are there for the foundation to reject another case or be in favor of it. And then the next one comes out and it's not. But it seems pretty clear there what Kavanaugh is saying could be striking down eventually when we get these rulings next week. I'm talking way too much, Ray. I should let you talk more. You're the guest and expert. I'm just actually proud I read a decision. Are you reading the tea leaves similarly, but we shouldn't maybe get ahead of ourselves too much?
Well, that's exactly how I feel about it. You know, I tend to read a lot into those footnotes as well and into this decision as well as in giving me a boost in reading the tea leaves as to how this decision is going to come out on Biden's executive order for student loans. And you're right. I feel that I have to check myself and not get ahead of myself because I have been surprised before, because these cases really turn on the individual facts and merits of each individual case. And so one ruling may give you a hint as to how things may go in another case, but certainly it's not dispositive, and it doesn't mean we can predict.
For sure. Ray Kaplan, hang on the line. We're not done yet. Financialrelief.com. You can call Ray for all things, 312-294-8989. I want to chat about those things that you do, Ray, after a quick break here on Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association on WGN. This is Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. Ray Kaplan from financialrelief.com. Kaplan, there's light ahead. There sure is. And Ray, we've been talking about whether we'll get a ruling on the Supreme Court here about student loan forgiveness. I mean, most people think it's going to be next week, right? They wrap up their decisions here end of June, early July. We're going to find out soon, even if it's in a couple days.
Right. We have to know before they leave for July recess. So it's got to be, I think it's going to be Tuesday or Friday next week.
Oh, okay. I want July recess. That sounds like fun. Are a lot of your clients just kind of waiting and wondering? And what are you telling them in the meantime?
Yes, they are. And so the main thing right now is to not do anything like pay off your loan or refinance your federal loan and turn it into a private loan. That's something you definitely want to hold off on, and perhaps have us analyze whether or not there are some other way to get your loans forgiven, because really this loan forgiveness, although it gets a lot of attention in the media, it has actually been a drop in the bucket compared to other loan forgiveness initiatives that are already the law and that have also been passed by other Biden executive orders, which have just our small firm has gotten tremendous results. We had just recently one of our clients who's a WGN listener had her $240,000 loan balance forgiven under a similar executive order.
Wow. Yeah, and what do those orders usually pertain to? Are they a little bit more narrowly written, a little bit more narrowly drawn, and maybe that's why they don't get as much attention, because they aren't some big sweeping everybody gets this sort of edict?
I think so, and I think the other reason is that they're remarkably complicated. The way they're written, I think, has been so complex so as to avoid opposition to kind of making splashy headlines or bringing lawsuits, because you really have to know how these executive orders would apply to particular loans, and all loans are treated differently under the law. So they're pretty complicated, but if you understand how they work and how they can apply to your loans, you really can have decades shaved off your loan payments and save hundreds of thousands of dollars, as we do every day. So it's really a key component to know the law and to understand how it can affect you and your loans.
Can you give an example of one that, like, you can explain a little bit more clearly to us?
Sure.
Okay, go ahead.
Sure. So there's another executive order out there right now, and a really good resource for people to check out is studentaid.gov. That's the site run by the Department of Education. And there's a one-time income-driven repayment, so it's called a one-time IDR account adjustment. And so what that means is, you probably have heard a lot, people will complain about, you know, they have loans that they took out in the 90s or the early 2000s, and they've been paying on them, and the loan balance seems to grow, and what are we going to do? We're never going to get rid of this thing. Well, under this IDR account adjustment, they're going to allow your loans to get credit for repayments that they normally, under normal circumstances, wouldn't qualify for. And the result of that is that because most federal loans are forgiven by operation of law after either 20 years or 25 years, that your loans, let's say you had an old loan from undergrad and then many years later you went to grad school. Well, now all of your grad school loans can get as much credit as your old undergrad loan by doing a federal consolidation and then applying the IDR account adjustment. So we've had many people where they were due to have to pay on their loans for another 15 to 20 years, and this is resulting in their loan being forgiven in one fell swoop. And if we can get your loans forgiven, you don't have to pay taxes on them before 2026. Sorry, go ahead, John.
No, I just want to make sure I understand. So someone took out an undergrad loan, over 20 years ago, they pay on that for a long time. But what they're doing is they're not maybe paying the full amount to cover and really lower the overall payment. In fact, the interest is piling on top and the amount goes up even higher and higher. You owe more than you did originally, even though you've paid a bunch already. And then you go to grad school and you take out loans. And normally those would have restarted a brand new clock on this 20 or 25 years. What this is doing, if this makes sense, is consolidating those two, even though they were done in different ways and different fashions, different times, consolidating them together and kind of lumping that under the umbrella of, hey, you're going to pay this for 20 to 25 years. Is that sort of it?
Correct. And so let's say your first loan became due in 2001, then that would mean that, or let's say, just to make it easier, that your first loan came due in the year 2000.
Even numbers, we love it, Ray. Thank you.
But the other loans didn't come due until, say, 2017. Well, your 2017 loans, you've got 20 more years from 2017 to pay on those. Now you can make all those loans as old as your year 2000 loans, and then those will be forgiven in 2 years, in 2025. So instead of having another, you know, 10, 15 years to pay on those loans, you only have another few years, and then they'll be forgiven.
Now, a lot of people might be listening who paid off their loans, and they went through that heartache, and look at the Biden student loan forgiveness, either the one-off as they roll their eyes at it, or they hear something that you just said and they're like, well, why, if you were so in debt, why would you also then go to grad school, take on all these loans, and now they're being forgiven? But I think what people miss is that, Ray, you're just interpreting the law. And if it's legal, and some of these laws were passed by Republican Congresses, signed by Republican presidents, some of the newer ones obviously were done by President Biden. But if you're entitled to it, don't think twice about taking it.
Well, absolutely. And I would also say this. I completely understand that argument because people do work really hard to pay off their loans. However, if there is a tax deduction available to you and you're not taking it, that's just silly. You're just leaving money on the table. So there are these rare opportunities that come along where there's a way that you can use the law so that you pay what you're supposed to pay, but not more than you're supposed to pay, and that you get what you're entitled to under the law. Mm-hmm. And I would argue that that's actually probably good for the economy in general, because that money gets put into the economy in other ways. So I think that that argument is not the best one, just because sometimes, you know, not everything is applied 100% evenly.
But I get where it's coming from, right? Like, I understand. And I think we've all had something in our life we battled through, and then a new generation of people don't have to do that. And it makes you go, oh, but come on, that's what I had to do. Yeah, that's not fun, right? But I'm not going to disparage the people after me from taking advantage of the new laws or the existing laws that have now been furthered or explained better, and hire someone like Ray Kaplan to help me figure that out. So,
not only that, John, but tuition is much higher these days than it was when we went to school.
Absolutely. And I will lump myself in that. I was kind of in that right before it really jumped. I graduated college in 06, and I can remember down at the University of Illinois dropping off a check each semester, and I think it was $2,800. Now, it was in-state, and that's still a lot of money, but, like, it wasn't $10,000 a semester. And that wasn't even including room and board, right? But, like, oh, my goodness, even for state school in-state, it is expensive as can be. All right, Ray, we're running out of time. Really quickly, you also help out people before they amass these student loans. You try and help them with best practices ahead of the game, right?
Absolutely. That's a big part of our practice, is kind of a pre-debt planning. So before your kids are heading off to college, just to make sure that you have a good individualized plan and strategy so that you don't have to make a bad financial decision and waste a lot of money. That's a really key thing, especially if you have more than one kid that you're sending off to college. There are ways to do it where you can save a lot of money if you know what you're doing.
312-294-8989. financialrelief.com. Ray, good to talk to you. We'll do it again soon, okay?
Thanks, John. Yep, anytime.